listening to the B-Fox and B-Frank show. It is one of the biggest weeks of the year, really the crossover between college football, college basketball. We've got the final week of the regular season. We've got Feast Week, the unofficial kickoff of the basketball season. So there is much to discuss. We will start, of course, with college football, and the Tennessee Volunteers got off to a phenomenal start against Georgia, and then unfortunately football is a 60-minute game, so there was not much after the first play of the game. But we kind of thought this one might be on the uglier side after Georgia had blown out Ole Miss, Tennessee had gotten blown out by Missouri. It was pretty much that. Maybe a little closer margin than Ole Miss got, so you can hang your hat on that, I guess. But at the end of the day, another dominated win for Georgia. They're still pretty good at football.
Yeah, it was the statement that we kind of expected back-to-back weeks from Georgia. It's one of those where I don't think Tennessee necessarily played poorly. Like, I think defensively they were decent. On the offensive side of the ball, they certainly left a lot of opportunities out there. It is clear where the drop-off between Hendon Hooker and Joe Milton is, and that was what we saw in this game, just the inability for Milton to make the easy plays really ended up costing Tennessee a bit there. But I really expected after that run by Jalen Wright to see the offense kind of let loose and just feel a little more comfortable because of the fact that they had already hit the home run ball. They'd already made a big play. Like, they can play without the pressure now, knowing that, hey, it is possible to score on this Georgia defense. Not that they didn't think it was, but they'd done it in one play. They can certainly, you know, this is an explosive offense. They certainly have the capability to do that more and more. But it seemed like as the game went on, very quickly, the confidence was shaken away from Tennessee fast, and that's where Georgia capitalized.
Yeah, it's not like we were even talking about, like, oh, they hit on everything on a scripted drive, went down the field. It's like,
right,
they could have just kept scripting, see what works. But yeah, that was Georgia really imposed their will, and it made it just look like kind of a fluky play by the end of it. But yeah, I mean, Joe Milton, kind of the Joe Milton experience we've gotten used to this season. Carson Beck has really improved his play over the course of the season, obviously.
Yeah. Like,
not going to get into the Heisman conversation or anything, but especially in the first half, completing 85% of his passes, over 200 yards, two touchdowns, just pretty nice for 30 minutes of work. And I think going into, you know, presumably the playoff, I think crazy things would have to happen for Georgia to not make it. And I mean, Alabama first, of course, but he's talented enough, and I think he's proven beyond a shadow of a doubt that he can compete with just about any offense that Georgia's going to go up against. That was a big question mark coming into the season now that Stetson Bennett is gone, but I think there should be no level of uncomfortability with Georgia's offense going up against anybody else. Like, the defense is still great, but the offense hasn't really missed a beat. So I think that's very comforting for Kirby Smart going into the postseason.
Yeah, agree on that completely. And like, if you think about it, Beck was the better player over Stetson Bennett, just through the ranking services and all that. Like, Stetson Bennett had to work hard, obviously, to get to where he was, and then earned his keep when he got there. But at the same time, like, you're looking at a guy that was highly thought of out of high school, had the accolades and the attributes to really be a great quarterback, and now he's got his opportunity, and we're seeing that come through. So he had confidence in Georgia with Stetson Bennett, a lower-tiered walk-on almost type player. You should feel pretty confident with Carson Beck and seeing what he's done in what, game 11 as a starter.
Yeah. Pretty good. And yeah, Georgia now with this win, first team to go undefeated in three straight seasons in the SEC since the conference went to an 8-game schedule. So again, another stat tells you Kirby Smart's on a heater right now, and nobody wants to play them going forward. On the West Coast, we had one close game. We had one not so close game. Start with the closer one. Washington, Oregon State. The haters will say that Michael Penix didn't have a great game because the stats certainly look bad in comparison to Bo Nix, Jaden Daniels. This game was played in a driving rain pretty much the whole way, which honestly I thought probably would have favored Oregon State. Certainly in the second half, they might have gotten a little better of the Huskies, but ultimately Washington sneaks out of their 2-point victory, still undefeated, still on track for a potential playoff spot because someone ahead of them is going to lose guaranteed. But Oregon State would have been a great story, as we kind of talked about last couple weeks of the season, be able to ruin Washington and or Oregon's hopes the last time they're playing as Pac-12 opponents. It's coming up a little bit short here, but can't really fault the effort.
Yeah, it was just an unfortunate game where quarterbacks didn't really have a ton of opportunity to make an impact, and it was a clear differentiator between the two. DJ has played better this year. There's no doubt about that. The change of scenery has been very good to him at Oregon State. The offense, I think, suits him much better than what was run at Clemson. He had two interceptions in this game. You flip it over to Michael Penix, and honestly, he is like a victim of his own success at this point with the video game numbers that he's put up through the year. To your point, like, the numbers don't pop off the page, but the important thing is A, his team won, but B, he had two touchdown passes in this bad weather, and that really changed the game and won it for them. You could argue he probably should have had a third pending a fumble deep in the red zone, but they did end up getting the ball back almost immediately. Yeah, it was just one of those games where you kind of expect defenses to have their way given the conditions. And in the end, there were a lot of turnovers, and it was the turnover bug that cost Oregon State.
Yeah, Penix adding a third touchdown on the ground as well. And yeah, like, DJ wasn't great. Oregon State has been a run-first football team. Damian Martinez still had a solid game, and you would think kind of in that sort of weather that's the approach that the Beavers would want to take anyway. But yeah, just almost like giving DJ too many opportunities, and unfortunately gave a couple of them away.
Mm-hmm.
But Washington, like I said, continues the undefeated season, and one more week to make it unscathed to the Pac-12 title game. Arizona is still alive. Arizona is still alive for a spot in the Pac-12 title game. No one would have seen that coming in the preseason. They really took it to Utah, who has been the standard bearer for the Pac-12 over the last several seasons. This is another game that Utah's kind of had a few of them. They had one against Oregon earlier this year. It's like, at some point, the injuries will catch up to you when you are playing a very good football team. That is what Arizona has been the last two-thirds of the season. They've had a couple close calls, but most ranked teams they've been handling pretty well, and they certainly did that to Utah on Saturday. Not really letting the distraction of a potential berth in a Pac-12 championship game kind of hold them back. They didn't play nervous, and just really – again, took it to what has been the best program in the conference.
Yeah, they got off the bus running too, 28-0 in the blink of an eye, basically, and really forced Utah out of how they want to play. Really did not allow them to establish the run game whatsoever. 53 pass attempts for Bryson Barnes is not even close to where Kyle Whittingham wants his offense to be, and that's not a slight at Bryson Barnes, who has actually played pretty well, I would say, given the circumstances, given, like you said, all the injuries and the issues and how tough the competition has been week in, week out in the Pac-12. But they want those numbers flipped around completely. I think anywhere in the 25 to 35 range in pass attempts would be ideal, with closer to 50 or 60 rush attempts, not the other way around for Utah. But good to see Jaden DeLora get in and down pass in this game. He was 2 of 2 for 51 yards with that touchdown. A guy that has truly been forgotten on this team after his injury and Noah Fifita coming in and really just sparking this unbelievable run from Arizona. Again, we've said it a few times, but how great would it be to see a 12-team playoff and see this Arizona team get a shot at somebody higher up the rankings? But I guess we'll have to wait another year.
Yeah. And Cam Rising come back for year 7. An official announcement came out. Could these be the two best teams in the Big 12 next year? Probably not.
It's possible.
Maybe. It'd be, they'd be in the thick of it this year for sure. But yeah, that's it's another wacky thing to look forward to. But yeah, if Arizona can find a way to get into the Pac-12 title game, that would be one of the best stories in college football. So that has been quite a resurgence compared to, I think it was a 1-11 first year for Jed Fish to what they're doing now. Mm-hmm. It's very, very impressive. All right, looking around the rest of the country, the good, the bad, and the ugly, what was your good from last week?
I had two quick ones. One, I don't know if it was technically last week or when the news got announced, but Washington State are extending their series through 2028. That is huge. We need to see more of this from teams that are schools that are affected by the rivalries changing and conference realignment and all that. We see Army and Navy figure out a way to do it, even though it's the exact opposite of them moving into the same conference. These programs should be able to figure it out because these games mean a lot. I'm looking at you, Oklahoma and Oklahoma State. The other piece I had, though, is I just wanted to shout out UNLV. The Rebs are 9-2. They just won at Air Force. They have had just a remarkable season on a very, very low-key factor. It has been truly great to see this program that has been down for so long sitting atop the Mountain West alone at 6-1. They will have a shot at that conference title game coming up in a couple weeks here, and it is well earned.
Yeah, that's a program that would do well to hold on to their coaching staff, but I think that could be very difficult because those are a lot of popular names on the coaching carousel. But I did have a rivalry game shout out. Kansas State, Kansas. So Kansas State, the winner here, 31-27, 15th straight win in the series and keeping their Big 12 title hopes alive. Just kind of being on the periphery. Will Howard still putting up good numbers this season. Kansas scratching and clawing with their third string quarterback to make this a competitive game. We are not losing this rivalry. I think Kansas would like to make it more of one in football, a little more back and forth, but a hard-fought win over your rival to keep your title hopes alive in conference. That's going to get a shout-out from me. My bad, it's rough times on the plains. New Mexico State, solid football team this year. They're going to be in the Conference USA title game, but Auburn paid them $1.85 million to come and just lay a beatdown on them, 31-10. New Mexico State had as many rushing yards as Auburn had total yards of offense, and it was not a fun day at the office or a close game at all. And I mean, Auburn's just kind of been stuck in neutral for several years now. I mean, Gus Bus has moved on to now a Power 5 conference. Don't really know where to go from here. You got all-around good guy Hugh Freeze, everyone's rooting for. But this was a tough scene. This was a tough scene on Saturday.
It's one of those things that you hate. I've no ill will towards Auburn, maybe towards their head coach, but certainly not the program itself. I have been like a self-proclaimed Auburn fan for quite a few years now on both the football and the basketball side. I backed Bo Nix more than anyone, maybe outside of his family, in the world for years. And then this is obviously the year that I didn't do it. And now look what he's doing. So credit to me, I guess. You're welcome, Bo. But there is nothing, no good way to spin this story. This was a 25-point underdog in New Mexico State that came in and won outright by 21 points in a game, like you mentioned, that really wasn't even that close throughout most of it. So incredibly bad close to the season here for Auburn. Obviously, they still have the Iron Bowl coming up this weekend, but 6-6, they'll play in a bowl game. They'll get another opportunity to play somebody else. But it is very possible that this team finishes the year with a losing record.
I like when the Iron Bowl is good, but it seems like it's either Auburn has a decent team and maybe we'll have a chance, or they just have a disaster of a season. And by the time they get to the Alabama game, they might not be able to complete a forward pass. And I feel like that's kind of been Auburn for a lot of this season. That is a shame. Cause I think Alabama's going to win by a million, but I'm open to being surprised.
We can hope.
What was your bad of last week?
It's Colorado. The Buffaloes have really struggled to close the year. Credit to us. We said that they were flying too close to the sun. People were giving them far too much credit for wins over a TCU team that lost basically every key piece, a Nebraska team that isn't good, and then they played a tight game with Colorado State. But this, they were really a Shedeur Sanders late touchdown pass away from losing or going 0-8 in Pac-12 play up until this game at Utah to close the season. And they are sitting alone at 1-7, losers of their last five right now in the Pac-12. Defense has been a huge problem. To Dion's credit, though, he said this wasn't going to be a one-year turnaround. I think a lot of people that weren't getting caught up in the story, getting caught up in the hype, were aware that this was going to take a few years to do. We're seeing it for sure, but now they really need to go out and attack this offseason in terms of recruiting, in terms of the portal, to bring in talent on the defensive side of the ball, because the offense, for the most part, has the ability to compete. You're obviously asking a lot of guys to step up a level, step up into power conference play, and they are trying to do so. I think next season we should see a better Colorado team, but expecting a bowl game, I think, was a lot for this program this year. And they're probably finishing where I would expect.
Yeah, and I think that's what was so hard for a lot of people to understand. Because I understand the excitement surrounding the program, especially right, coming out of the gate the way that they did. And some exciting, competitive back-and-forth games. But at the end of the day, TCU nor Colorado State are very good football teams. So if you're kind of on that level, you know, unfortunate really that this debut season is in like the best season of the Pac-12 we've had in recent memory. I think in a down year in the Pac-12, this team probably could have made a bowl game, but at the same time, you lost to Stanford, so I can't really say that confidently. Like, Stanford is your classic bad Pac-12 team. But yeah,
you didn't just lose to Stanford. You blew a almost 30-point lead to Stanford.
Yeah. You lost in spectacular fashion that still is hard to believe. But yeah, it's just kind of one of those things, like when a story is issued incorrectly and then makes a correction later, no one acknowledges the correction. It's just all what was initially reported. So it's like, right, nobody's talking about Colorado anymore and like being disappointing down the stretch. It's because at the end of the day, like, you can always move the goalpost from a positive perspective. Be like, we hit the season win total by like week three, the over on that. So it's a successful first season, but it's just been gut punch after gut punch to the finish line. And like, they need so much help in the trenches. And I think with how Dion has kind of handled his offensive line, there are good players out there, good prospects who might be a little wary about kind of getting in there. Just how critical he has really been. But yeah, it's going to be a little bit easier in the Big 12, still a power conference, but this was a real trial by fire this season. So not super surprised that they're kind of lipping to the finish line.
Yeah.
For my ugly, I mean, Jordan Travis, your foot is not supposed to bend that way. That was
correct.
Truly ugly in every sense of the word. Just a gruesome injury. Florida State, of course, bounced back and took care of Northern Alabama. But going forward, this makes things very difficult. Like, his college career is over. There is still a great chance that Florida State could go undefeated. But now, if you are the playoff committee, I have a hard time seeing a scenario in which that, knowing that Jordan Travis is done for the year, that does not kind of affect how you view and rank Florida State going forward, even if they don't lose a game.
Yeah, it's going to be funny to see tonight as we record them finally put Washington in front of Florida State, despite the fact that Washington had the better resume to begin with and
right.
and everything like that. Everything pointed to Washington being the better team overall. Now, all of a sudden, you know, the ugly win in the rain over Oregon State is what they're going to point to and say, well, you know, they beat a top 15 team on the road, and that finally put them over the edge to get them over Florida State. Like, no. It's the fact that Jordan Travis is hurt and done for the year, and you don't want a backup quarterback possibly taking a spot in the college football playoff. Again, this would just be a great time to have an expanded playoff. Like, maybe if we had the foresight to do this a couple of years earlier, we'd be talking about some real interesting opportunities and possibilities with, you know, an Oregon team getting into the playoff, or talking about some of those teams with two or three losses, like maybe even an LSU sneaks in this year. But no, that'll be next year.
Yeah, because I think right now there's like 8 or 9 teams that have a realistic path of sorts to a 4-team playoff. Mm-hmm. Obviously, if you expand that to 12, there's a lot more. But yeah, it's going to be interesting going down the stretch, because, like, I don't know. It's not like Florida State very easily could win their last two games. Like, they're going to get Louisville in the ACC championship game, who is just, they got blown out by Pitt. So,
yeah,
you know, not the best measuring stick for if you deserve to be in the playoff. But yeah, it's, I don't know. I can, because right now we could very easily finish with 4 undefeated teams. And if that happens, that seems pretty clean. Michigan or Ohio State will bitch and moan, whichever one loses that game and is left out. But at the end of the day, like, if 4 undefeated teams, what are you going to do? But if Oregon wins, or if Alabama beats Georgia, any number of things, then chaos will happen. And we know the committee is a lot of things. One thing they are not is consistent, and that is everyone's biggest gripe with them. So just however they're going to finagle things and kind of justify how the last couple weeks shake out will be interesting. But yeah, I think tonight's top 4 will be very telling if they do sort of penalize Florida State for their quarterback suffering a gruesome injury.
Yeah, that's – I would love to see them explain their way out of that one.
Can't do it. Can't do it.
No.
Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
I was just saying that was my ugly as well. You hate to see that. It truly was ugly in so many different definitions of the word.
That it was. All right. What was the best thing you saw last week?
The heating up of the Heisman race. Jaden Daniels had a monster game against his opponent, but still 25 of 30, 413 yards, 6 touchdowns through the air. Almost added another 100 on the ground, just 4 yards shy, and 2 rushing touchdowns in that game. And then Bo Nix doing a ton of damage in their game before the half, basically all of it. 24 of 29, 404 yards, 6 touchdowns through the air. I don't know who deserves it at this point. I think if I, you know, gun to my head, it's probably Jaden Daniels, just because the numbers he's put up overall have been insane. But if you look at Bo Nix, this Oregon team has really taken their foot off the gas against a lot of different opponents throughout the year. And what he could have done could be way bigger. Then there's also the factor of he plays for a better team. You still have Michael Penix out there who plays for an undefeated Washington team and has had an incredible season himself. This is probably the best Heisman race we've had in a number of years, and it is one of the most exciting. I'm intrigued to see how many guys get invited first and foremost to New York, and then who ends up taking home the trophy.
I think Penix is probably out, barring a great last two games.
Right.
I think he kind of set the bar for himself too high. I think it is Jaden Daniels right now, and I'm excited to maybe see some change in how we view this award, because you're saying mm-hmm. like if people are kind of going to hold it against Bo Nix for having a better team, like that's not entirely unfair. I just wish we did it sooner. It's like I get so sick to my stomach thinking of the year that Geno Smith wasn't a finalist, but Colin Klein was, even though Geno Smith had much better numbers, just had a terrible, terrible defense. It's like, oh, Kansas State keeps winning games. Well, you know, QB wins aren't a stat, so let's stop kind of pretending that it is. I think it's really hard to deny kind of the mastery that Jaden Daniels has, but it is going to be one of those things that you can look at this through any number of lenses, especially if you have proclivities to support Oregon or LSU naturally.
Right.
Could say maybe Jaden Daniels having a worse defense is an advantage for him because he gets the ball more, has more opportunities to make plays.
And he has to make plays.
Yeah. So it's
Whereas Bo Nix needs to run the clock.
Whoever we get will have had an unbelievable Heisman season. Nobody's going to win this by default. So I think that in itself is a good thing. I think this one will be going down to the wire unless something crazy happens, against Alabama or for Bo Nix against Washington or in the Civil War. We'll see. A couple big opportunities left.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I am going to be nice and I will accept defeat. Iowa being Iowa. They just the kings of they can't keep getting away with this, but they did. No, I'm just kidding. But the best game of the week was Florida Missouri for me. That was back and forth. Graham Mertz goes down. Florida really has no offense except running the ball, and yet they're still able to claw back in that one, take the lead, and then just have it all come crashing down. The thicker kicker hits a game winner. That's another one. You can see exactly what you want to see. Like everything that was wrong with Florida fans get another opportunity to just yell and scream and hate Billy Napier. Missouri continues their sort of magical season that they're on. That again would be a playoff team if it was 12 teams. That was the most entertaining game I watched Saturday by a wide margin. Just really, really fun second half of that one.
Yeah, in Missouri, second place alone in the SEC East and would be tied with Ole Miss and LSU for third, overall in the conference. So hell of a season for Mizzou. Really good to take the attention off the basketball program, which we'll probably talk about shortly. But
We will.
It was a fun game, really fun back and forward. A lot of Cody Schrader again had a monster game. That's all you can really say.
This week we've only got two ranked matchups right now. Start with the game, Michigan, Ohio State. This is in Ann Arbor. Obviously, a lot of hatred. A lot of things being said, both sides. Michigan cheated, but Michigan fans will tell you that Ohio State cheated too, and it's probably worse because they're Ohio State. So on the football field, who do you like in this one?
I like Michigan. Nothing has changed for me in my regard for Ohio State. I still don't know if they're a good team. I don't believe they're that good of a team. They have dealt with injuries. They do have great players at skill positions throughout the offense and the defense, but Michigan is built for this kind of game. They are built for the grind it out and win with the run. They have some great running backs. JJ McCarthy has really played well this season and understands how to run this offense. Defensively, they are big, they are physical, and they are fast. They, like we've talked about time and time again, they are built to win this game. And now, as they have continued to evolve, they're built to attempt to compete with the powers of the SEC. I don't know that Ohio State is there. I don't know that I trust Kyle McCord to get the job done. Ohio State's defense will have to play an exceptional game in order to win this one. And I don't think this is a situation where maybe with a Cade McNamara or other Michigan quarterbacks of years before, you could stack the box, really try and make Michigan one-dimensional in the passing game. I almost think that's what you do the opposite way if you are Michigan. You just obviously have to contain Maserati Marv. But otherwise, I think Michigan wins this one, and I think it's going to be similar to the games we saw for both of those teams against Penn State, where the scoreboard looks closer than the game really was.
Yeah, I'm on Michigan as well. I just, like Iowa, I have resigned myself to accept that this will never go away. We will get more weeks of Michigan just screaming that they are the victims while they are firing coaches for no wrongdoing, but, you know, just had to let them go. And being the victim on national TV, I think Ohio State has tried harder and harder to mold their team into more like Michigan. Like, kind of what you're saying about Ohio State all year, like, they're not as impressive as they normally are because they're not scoring 40 points a game. That's mainly right. What we're saying about Michigan the last two seasons. Like, they're just very physical, really good defense, which Ohio State has. I think the difference is Ohio State does still have talents all over the offense, except at quarterback. Kyle McCord's talented, but he's just not on that level of what you would normally expect for an Ohio State quarterback. Certainly, you know, the last decade plus of guys that have been running through that program, going right to the NFL. Maybe he'll get there. He's not there this year. I think Michigan's inevitable here. But again, I would not hate to be proven wrong.
That is, take that screen capture and put the caption on it. Michigan is inevitable. That is this episode.
Elsewhere, you got the Civil War. This is one that, like the Apple Cup, should be extended, but this is the last one for now. In Eugene, Oregon State trying to bounce back the close loss to Washington. Can they kind of get the final laugh over the Ducks before the Ducks leave to the Big Ten?
I don't think so. I do think this is going to be a close game. I think it'll be a throw out the record books, even though both teams are good. Oregon State just has not performed very well against the top tier teams in the Pac-12 this year. I think that goes away in this one. I think the ground game really helps Oregon State, and DJ cannot play as poorly as he did last week. Presumably, I haven't checked the forecast, presumably the weather will be a bit better in this game. But Bo Nix is the best player on the field, and he is going to control this game. He is going to take Oregon across the finish line, get them the win, and get them into the Pac-12 title game. So I'll take the Ducks.
Same. Yeah, I mean, Bo Nix is head and shoulders better than DJ playing at home. I'm going with the Ducks here. Feel pretty good about that. And that's it. That is it for college football this week. Basketball, there will be more to talk about next week because we are still in the midst of Feast Week. Maui is going on right now. We've got Atlantis, Myrtle Beach, other events going on. We've had a couple that have taken place already. We're kind of talk about those in our winners and losers. My first winner, familiar team, UConn Huskies, have now won 22 straight games against teams outside of the Big East by double digits, which is a ridiculous streak. Still no Castle, but we're able to handle Indiana and Texas double digits in the Empire Classic at Madison Square Garden, the home away from home, as it were. They look pretty solid again. Not quite the same perimeter punch that you kind of saw from Jackson and Jordan Hawkins last year, but there's solid players all around there. Obviously, the returners, Caravan, can light it up. Newton is solid. Cam Spencer can just be a little annoyance Rutger guy out there, can fill it up. And kind of a new cling-in of sorts, just big moments and limited bench minutes. Samson Johnson in the front court had some big moments against Texas. So, yeah, it's a little bit of a different look, but UConn still looks like they'll be one of the best teams in the country.
Yeah, it's frustrating, it's annoying, but that's what it is. Like, their eighth or maybe even ninth man is Sasan Diarra, who played well at Texas A&M. He has played a role last year, on this UConn team. He averages about 20 minutes a game, and he does a little bit of everything for them. But you nailed it. Caravan is just an unbelievable scorer. He can score at all three levels. He is pure from beyond the arc. Cam Spencer just gets so many open looks because of the great ball movement that this offense has. Their inside-out presence is there. Tristan Newton isn't even playing that great of basketball. He's shooting just 28% from three and averaging three turnovers a game, and yet they're still dominating teams. Klingon's an interesting case study. He really does not seem destined to be a 25-minute-plus guy a game, but he still gets the hype of a Zach Edey or a lottery pick in the NBA draft. I don't know how that's going to work out, but he does exactly what they need him to do. And now that they have Samson Johnson, who has emerged as a legitimate threat in the post, he can spell him and also provide a nice change of pace at the forward position. And this is all, again, like we said, without their star player, freshman Stephon Castle. So this is a scary team. They've got a lot of depth. They've got a lot of different ways they can beat you. They aren't even shooting the three very well this year. They're shooting just 32%, but their top two guys, Spencer and Caravan, are both shooting over 40, which is remarkable. And they just light it up. They absolutely light it up. They're averaging 89 points a game, and it sucks. But UConn is good yet again.
Yeah, Klingon's never going to be like the focal point the offense, but it can kind of flow through him a little bit. And then defensively, he's just going to wall up and make life hell for whatever big man he goes against. Like, he physically dominated Ware for a lot of that game against Indiana.
Yeah.
And I know going up against some of the better big men in the country that are featured in the Big East, that's kind of what his role is going to have to be. Each and every night. But yeah, it's a Dan Hurley team. They're a tough bunch. Who do you have for a winner?
I'm going to shout out the Princeton Tigers. They picked up the early opening season win over Rutgers, as we mentioned, and then they beat a good Duquesne team on the road. They have just played well. Like, they're a well-oiled machine. Mitch Henderson has this team rolling. Caden Pierce, local guy, has played very well. They have Xavier Lee, who's been shooting the ball really well for them. They've got a bunch of guards that can make things happen, and they just play unselfish basketball. Sometimes a little too unselfish. They do have a turnover problem at this point, but in regards to what they're doing, Yale looks good in the Ivy League. Princeton, as I'm mentioning now, is played very well. But the Ivy League should be a very fun race this season. Cornell's off to a hot start. Harvard looks solid. Columbia's playing well. Penn, obviously, with the win over Villanova. So this is going to be a solid Ivy League, but watch out for Princeton again.
Yeah, it'll never happen, but two-bit Ivy League be very fun.
Make it happen.
But yeah, the Penn win over Villanova was notable as well. And yeah, Princeton over Duquesne. Duquesne is expected to be one of the more improved teams in the A-10. We kind of talked about that league last week. And yeah, Caden Pierce is it's been having a good start to his sophomore season. A little bit of an undersized team, but I mean, when he's in there kind of gobbling up a lot of the rebounds, putting up double-doubles, that makes life easier. And that's kind of in the scope of the non-conference. Like, obviously, Ivy League isn't full of a lot of trees, so he'll be able to do just fine in there. Yeah, it's a team that looks like it wants to get back to the NCAA tournament and maybe make another run.
Yep.
Out of the MTEs that have already finished, I mean, Houston won, but they were expected to win, so whatever. Liberty won their tournament. You had mentioned a lot of very good mid-majors in this field. And now I'm backwards. This was Myrtle Beach, right? Or was this Charleston? This was Myrtle Beach, yes. Okay.
This was Myrtle Beach.
I kept mixing the two of those up all week. But, yeah, Liberty knocked off Furman.
They should not be allowed to play those at the same time. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. Especially since Charleston wasn't even playing in Charleston. That was the part that just screwed me up.
Yes.
Liberty beat Furman, Wichita State, and Vermont. Vermont had a really good run to the championship game, too, but unfortunately came up just short. Kyle Rode averaged just under 20 points per game for the Flames on their run. Undefeated to start this young season and look like they are going to be one of the better teams in Conference USA, which is a shaken up conference with, you know, Florida Atlantic departing, among other things. So that is something to monitor. But nothing that will necessarily jump off the page, like didn't beat a top 10 opponent, but just getting quality wins over solid mid-majors in lieu of, since Bracket Busters doesn't exist anymore, pretty good run to start the season.
Yeah, they're shooting the ball really well. I love watching their offense play. It's just very smooth, very rhythmic. It works. They're shooting the ball exceptionally well, 50% from the field. 41% from three as a team is insane. Kyle Rode, like you mentioned, is on fire. 51.4% from three right now. That's 18 of 35. Just remarkable numbers. And they share the ball well. 16.5 assists a game to just 10 turnovers. So fun team to watch. Certainly someone to pay attention to in a, I'll say it, it's a down Conference USA with all the realignment. They are a significantly smaller conference than years past. But there's not really anyone else that I can point to right now and say for sure that I think will be a team that should be near the top or competing near the top with a Liberty team the way they're looking right now. UTEP is undefeated, but really hasn't done much. 4-0 at home. Middle Tennessee is typically pretty solid. Western Kentucky, also a solid team. There's not much else, though. Like, this is a league that Liberty can run away with if they continue to play like they are.
Yeah, got gutted, honestly.
It did.
But yeah, it'll be interesting kind of to see how things shake out. But yeah, obviously losing North Texas and FIU and some other squads. But yeah, it's like FIU doesn't put the fear of God in anybody. So it'll be Liberty's to lose, I would think, at this point in the season. Who else do you have for winners?
I'm going Mississippi State. They have entered the top 25. They have played very well to open the season. They beat Arizona State pretty handily in Chicago to open the year. They beat a okay Washington State team, and then they beat a Northwestern team that is expected to be in the NCAA tournament this year, and I'm sure we will talk about the Wildcats in just a bit. Mississippi State is playing great defense yet again. Chris Jans continues to play solid defense. They're fourth right now in KenPom, 16th overall as a team, and they're getting incredible production from freshman Josh Hubbard, who can shoot the lights out. This was a horrible miss by Seton Hall, if I may just make a quick injection there. I can't believe we missed out on this kid, but he's been great. Jimmy Bell Jr. has played very well. Deshaun Davis, another Seton, might I add, adding a nice repertoire at the guard position. They are still without their best player. Tolu Smith has not played yet this season. They look to be a team that could be a dark horse in the SEC this year. I like this team more than I like Texas A&M, and that's kind of where I'll leave that.
Yeah, I don't think that's unfair. I mean, they're defending really, really, really well. I mean, they got one of the more coveted perimeter transfers in Andrew Taylor, and I mean they haven't really needed anything from him. He's yeah, playing less than 10 minutes a game. So Hubbard's really been doing the lion's share of that. Yeah, once Tolu Smith comes back, this is an even different ball club, because they've been able to defend under Jans. It's just been, can they score? Can anyone hit a shot? Yeah. And now it looks like the answer is yes. So if that continues, then this is a real player in the SEC for sure.
Yep. That was all for winners. I was not feeling very positive this week.
I was just going to say that's all I have as well. I mean, we alluded to it earlier. Start with Missouri. Just this team is a bit of a mess. Losing at home to previously winless Jackson State. Not their first close call of the season either. There was a lot of excitement in the opener from Tamar Bates and what he could bring shooting, kind of something they were missing, has kind of been hit or miss since, as I could tell you was probably going to happen. But close call against Minnesota, really had to scratch and claw their way to a victory there over a Minnesota team that I don't see a path to them being very good. Like, pretty much everyone around the league is expecting Ben Johnson to get fired at the end of the season. Maybe this is the start of the championship DVD for the Gophers, but I'm putting my money on any other results. So,
yeah,
Missouri just not looking cohesive. Kind of anything they were building in year one under Dennis Gates looks to be out the door. There's a lot of new pieces in addition to Bates, trying to get Caleb Grill integrated from Iowa State, and other newcomers just trying to find something and adjust to life without Kobe Brown. And it doesn't appear to be going well so far.
Yeah, a couple thoughts there. First is, who would have thought that Caleb Grill wasn't good outside of Hilton Coliseum? If only people had told them, anyone that last year. Second is just how many of the warts that Kobe Brown covered last season for this team. I mean, he was such a good player all over the floor. It is truly remarkable now to see where Missouri is and how much of that, or what they did last year and how much of that can be attributed directly to him. I mean, Nick Honor and Noah Carter are back from last season. They are two of the three leading scorers right now. Along with Sean East, who's taken a bigger role. Like, they have some continuity in this roster, but it is simply the lack of Kobe Brown that has been a massive, massive issue for them. And we've seen that now in this horrible loss to Jackson State.
Yeah, and the worst news is this is a very deep SEC this year, as we just talked about Mississippi State, who is not one of the teams in the preseason that people are talking about as a challenger. And, you know, certainly other teams have struggled. Big example would have to be Arkansas losing to UNC Greensboro, but they're going to be back in the mix. Like, Musselman teams are never that good out of the gates. So I think this is way more concerning for a team like Missouri, who doesn't really have that track record. And you don't want to kind of be lost in the shuffle amongst the likes of like LSU, who we knew was going to be a very bad basketball team this season.
Right.
Go over to you. Who do you have as a loser?
You touched on one of them, but really the loser is me. I placed two futures bets. One, Arkansas to win the SEC. They immediately go out and lose to UNC Greensboro, as you mentioned. Two, I placed the St. Mary's to the Final Four bet, and they have not won a game since I placed that. The Gales have looked horrible. The Weber State loss was tough. They blew a double-digit lead late in that one. San Diego State game was simply uncompetitive. And then Xavier, they could not do anything offensively. Shot 21% from three, 25% from the floor, turned it over 11 times. Just not the St. Mary's team that we expected or are used to. There's a lot of continuity from last season on this team. Guys like Aiden Mahaney need to step up and take control. And when he's not scoring, the Gales typically are a solid defensive team. They just simply are not playing that well on that side of the floor right now. They're shooting an abysmal 25% from three as a team this season, and they really need to get that sorted out if they want to have a chance to get back, not just into the national conversation, but Gonzaga's playing well. They lost a tough one to Purdue, but they played well in that game. They are, I think, winning right now as we're recording against
Syracuse.
Yeah, they're up 10 right now in the second half. Like they're playing in a loaded Maui field that's only going to make them better. And there's, you know, St. Mary's really needs to find it, because if they do not, the rest of their non-conference schedule isn't necessarily the easiest. And then going into West Coast Conference play, we've seen how tough it can be for the teams at the top with the target on their back.
Yeah. Yeah, we've got Caden Pierce's high school teammate, Braden Huff, is first season after redshirting for Gonzaga, making an impact, getting some action against Purdue last night and again against Syracuse. But, yeah, I mean, St. Mary's right now, they're teetering very close to won't be able to get an at-large bid if they need one. But you know, San Diego State's not a bad loss to vacuum, but when you're stacking it up with you know, Weber State and Xavier, who's dealing with some major injuries, not really expected to contend in the Big East, then does not reflect well on the team. Really, there are no secondary options emerging after Aiden Mahaney, and that's what defenses have been keying in on. So Randy Bennett's got his work cut out for him to try to get this taken care of quickly, because it's very uncharacteristic for a St. Mary's team to be struggling this much early in the season, especially one that came into the season with such high hopes, you know, you're being favored over Gonzaga to win that conference.
Mm-hmm.
I'll shout out an old friend, Virginia. They might struggle to score the ball this year. They just lost by 24 to Wisconsin, another team that people are getting ready to leave for dead after how they had struggled, especially in their blowout loss to Providence. It's Reese Beekman, and then it's just nobody else. There's no perimeter scoring really with any sort of consistency for Virginia. I don't know if anyone on this roster is going to average 13 points per game for the season. It is that bleak. And it's just, it's one of those things. And it's actually what I love to talk about with Greg Gard. It's like, you have a system, it works. You still need good players in that system. You know, Wisconsin has slowly kind of drifted back towards mediocrity is, you know, Bo Ryan, Greg Gard, great system, but you've got to put, you know, your Sam Deckers and players of that caliber in it to really get the most out of it. And as I've loved to say, Greg Gard's been recruiting at a MAC level. And, you know, his teams have reflected that. And Tony Bennett, when he had a national championship run, Kyle Guy was a very high recruit. Ty Jerome the future NBA player, DeAndre Hunter, so going to the NBA. It's like, you need guys like that in your system. Like, the pack line as it is getting a little outdated in that most teams, most good teams that you're going to play have guys who can shoot. And if all you're trying to do is prevent people from getting into the paint, that's not necessarily the end of the world. It's why Syracuse doesn't play the 2-3 anymore, and why they just sucked for the last however many years at the end of Boeheim's tenure. So that combination, you have nobody who can score. They're still going to probably win 20 games somehow, but it's just going to be extra, extra infuriating basketball. And they're going to have more than a few stinkers like this where they just cannot buy a bucket.
Some things change, others just do not. Like, the issues for Virginia will always be there. It's kind of like the London Perantis days, where he was the only one seemingly trying on offense to score, and it made him look like a superstar, whereas he was a solid to average offensive player in college basketball. You do feel for Reese Beekman at times, but he also chose this life. So you can't really feel too bad. But this is the thing. All they have to do is get into the tournament, and then this can cause anyone problems. Like you said, with the Syracuse analogy, it is Syracuse doesn't play the 2-3 zone for a number of reasons. One of them being it doesn't really work. The second, though, the flip side of that, though, is that when they get to the tournament, teams that don't see it or aren't used to it, like the ACC or like the insert rival here that they play every single year, they get stifled by it. Teams will get stifled by this Virginia defense. They just need to win enough games to get to March, and then anything can happen.
Yeah. But ultimately, the bigger problem for Tony right now is who's going to score. And if Reese Beekman is that guy, who's going to be the secondary scorer? Because he's not going to give you 20 a night. That's just not happening.
No.
Who else do you have as a loser?
Let's talk about the Northwestern Wildcats. Okay. They lost to Mississippi State. Again, this is a good Mississippi State team. I'm saying this more for the fact that they have just struggled to put away teams that they should be significantly better than throughout the year. They struggled with Binghamton to open the season. They struggled with Western Michigan. They struggled with Rhode Island. This is a team expected to be around the top 25, compete in the Big Ten, and be in the NCAA tournament this year. I don't see it. I really have not seen it whatsoever with this Northwestern team through this run. Boo Booey is shooting the three horrifically. Ryan Langborn has not shot the three well, but he adds another dimension as a scorer. Their bigs are going to be a huge problem throughout this season. They don't really have a front court to speak of, and it is going to cause a ton of problems for them. So I basically think is I'm selling Northwestern at this point. I don't think the Wildcats are a tournament team, despite the pundits and the things that they bring back and add to this roster. If the prophecy is fulfilled and I am correct, or I'm proven correct at the end of the season, that means that we will get a few peak Chris Collins moments, which is just great for everyone. So let's all root for that.
Yeah. This is about what I expected from Northwestern, though. I don't think they're a particularly good basketball team. I think they're just going to do what they did last year, win a lot of close games. And then you look up and be like, wow, they've won a lot of these close games. But yeah, I mean, Brooks Barnheiser is a guy they've expected to take a leap forward. He has to an extent. But yeah, I mean, Matthew Nicholson, like Ryan Young before him, is a classic, like, not even change of pace, but just like an off-the-bench big man who is not really going to be an offensive threat outside of, you know, stickbacks, things of that nature, getting rebounds, getting fouled. Complete no-show against Mississippi State. And to your point, yeah, they don't really have much else after that. I mean, Northwestern is at its best under Chris Collins when they are defending at a very high level, which they're not. The talent disparity is there as it always is. So if you're not making it up, making up for it by defense, you're going to find yourself in a lot of close games against, you know, presumably inferior opponents. And then, you know, right, when you play up, you're going to struggle. So yeah, this is, I don't know. I wasn't super high in Northwestern coming into this season, but in fairness, I never am. So,
right.
I don't know. This is, they could use a Chase Audige for sure.
Yeah. I'd also love to throw, and this is an interesting one. I'm going to throw St. John's on the list. This is not from a place of hate. This is more from a, I am surprised at how bad this team is defensively right now. They got obliterated by a Michigan team that I really don't think is very good. I put them kind of in the same category as Northwestern. They let Dayton score 88 points, and while Daron Holmes II is a very good player, they're without their star guard, Malachi Smith. They were fortunate to beat Utah, and they were very fortunate to beat North Texas. St. John's very well could be 2-3 or 1-4 at this point in the season. They struggle mightily with turnovers. They average 15.2 a game. They shoot it pretty well. They can score, but defensively they are horrific. They're in the hundreds in KenPom. The defense just has not gelled. This is Rick Pitino we're talking about. This is a guy that has won national titles, that has taken every major program he's coached to the Final Four. He has put together a vast majority of this roster after about two games. He said, we simply do not have enough front court depth, so we will have to address that. He has scholarship players in walk-on spots right now on the team. Shout out NIL. And they are still struggling on the defensive end. I do think they will find a way to turn around in Big East play and become better on that side of the ball. The question is, does the offense suffer because of that? Normally you'd say no, but I really don't know with this St. John's team. It seems like there's just something that's a little off where they should be a lot better than they are. And this is coming from someone that really expected them to be middle of the pack on the bubble for the NCAA tournament this year. Unlike, again, a lot of predictions and pundits had for Northwestern, they also love St. John's. It's a lot of new pieces to put together, and I just don't see it working that well until later in the year. And at that point, you really just have to hope that the damage done early isn't too much.
A lot of it's just buy-in, and I think a lot of people put a lot of faith in Rick Pitino. He said it after the Michigan game. Like, these are a lot of guys coming over as number one, number two scoring option, and have really had to defend with that kind of intensity. And you can kind of see the North Texas game to start, because, presumably he got on their ass after the Michigan game. They were defending with a lot more intensity. And then that waned, and then North Texas almost won the game. So just the challenge right now that he is finding, and that, you know, the more or less like mild-mannered Pitino will probably not last for very long, because this is a team that is by his standards pretty soft, especially defensively. If they're not going to defend at a decent level, at a sub Iowa level, then they're not going to win a lot of games. And I think that's what they're finding out right now.
Yeah. I'd agree with that. So they're certainly an interesting case study of the modern transfer portal and NIL era. And having Rick Pitino at the helm is a very interesting coach to be there, just because of the fact that he has success pretty much everywhere he goes, and has been such a great college coach. So definitely something to watch as the season moves on.
Yeah, for sure. Michigan had a fun run in the sun, but now they've lost to Long Beach State. So I think they're going closer back to who we thought they were. And just again, the Big Ten looking pretty stinky across the board. But spin zone, Wisconsin just got a blowout win over a ranked team. So, you know, there is that.
It's true. Even if it is the exact same team that they are.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And obviously Maryland deserves a mention if we're going to talk about the Big Ten.
Yeah. They're not great.
No.
It's really If Purdue doesn't win the Big Ten this year, something is incredibly wrong with them. But
yeah,
Nebraska also undefeated, and Penn State, two teams we expected to be there.
Of course.
But yeah, that was the ultimate get right game for Villanova after Penn.
Yeah,
it's like, oh, we got Maryland. We're both struggling, but somebody's got to come away with it. I'm going to trust Villanova in that situation. And that's exactly what happened. It's like Maryland offensively just does not have anyone. Yeah. Like everyone in their front court is more or less playing out of position, and it just ruins the spacing. You don't really have a true calming influence or like anyone on the team that is sort of a high percentage shooter. When you have to go and get a bucket, we've talked about Shamir Young, but yeah, it's just the amount of bigs that Kevin Willard wants to play on the floor at the same time, sort of dictated by the roster, a small, tiny part, but it's just there's no spacing offensively. And I mean, the good bigs they have on their team just don't really have room to operate in the paint either because of that. So yeah, it's all pretty yucky.
Yeah. Some numbers to back this up, just to illustrate the point. Maryland is 351st in points per game, averaging 58 a game. They're one of five teams in the country that average less than 20 made field goals a game. They are 357th in made field goals per game. Field goal percentage, they are 349th. They are 355th at 21.6% in three-point percentage. And even from the free throw line, they are not very good, shooting under 70%. So not great.
Yeah, that's a zero-level score. You want to be a three-level score. That's
you do.
That's unfortunate.
They were the last one I had, though.
Okay. Yeah, I don't have anybody else either, so we'll stop it there. Happy Thanksgiving to everyone out there. We have a great holiday with friends and family, and we will be back next week.